conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions. Just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndyScrolls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. I've got a fatal case of not giving a shit.
I'm Kiki Monique, and I am in the business of other people's business.
Yes! I'm here for it. You guys, I'm so excited to talk about other people. I was going to say normal people's business because I'm thinking about the show on Hulu, Normal People, which, you know, sometimes you just think about. Occasion. You guys, it's Annie's Girls. It's episode 316. And I'm so excited to be joined by one of my favorite guests who every day I think When is she moving back to New York City so we can go grab drinks? I'd love for it to happen. Maybe today's episode will be an East Coast intervention because we want her back, but I'm so excited she's here today. You know her as the talk of shame, professional talker, social media journalist, CEO of Deep Dives, host of the podcast I'm Sorry with Lemonada Media, and I know her as one of my favorite people to follow on Instagram, Kiki Monique. Kiki, how are you?
Oh my God, I'm so good. I mean, I was actually thinking maybe I'll spend like a month in New York.
In July,
because we got Jen Shah's trial coming up. And since, like, lawyer, I'm going to add that to my bio.
Yes. I'm here for it. Actually, there's something that we were talking about pre-show, which I'm going to discuss. Just remind me. And as soon as we're done recording, I want to have a little conversation with you. Do you know anything about, like, I keep saying, like, I want to get some, like, mezzanine seats, like, center back. But, like, do you know, in, like, the tea of learning, do we know how to even go about getting fucking tickets to this circus?
Well, believe it or not, I called the clerk today because I was trying to set up my situation because I was like, do I need
press access or something? Yeah.
No, it seems like all we have to do, there's a QR code that you go there, you scan.
50% off. Okay, great.
And you scan this QR code. It basically is like, I think it's like for COVID protocol. And you get in there and you can just go and you have access to it. I mean, of course, I would love to see if there's a way to get press access.
Right.
Maybe you get better treatment, but, you know, we'll figure out how that works. But yeah, I mean, I'm just going to show up there. Like, they open the doors at 8 a.m. Her trial is not till 9:30, but there's a cafeteria, the clerk said. So you can go hang out in the cafeteria till the courtroom opens. And, you know, obviously you can't bring any recording devices. She said they're going to take our phones, too. So I'm going to be like, I'm going to see if I can hide a phone, but.
You know what I love about this is that you're saying that on a recorded podcast about a federal trial. Anything else you want to sneak in and do that's illegal? Should we?
Totally,
okay,
totally.
Great. Great.
Just kidding. It was all jokes. But yeah, I otherwise I'm going to have to go on YouTube and figure out the best way to take courtroom notes, as you know, because if it's only pen and paper and we're going to have to get all of these things that are happening, it's not going to be the same as the Johnny Depp. It's not going to be televised, not going to be able to rewind. It's going to be a lot more difficult to recap.
Wait, so what's going to end up happening, God forbid they do take away our phones, is that I'm going to do what Aziz Ansari did on Parks and Rec, which is draw myself a phone and then just hit the piece of paper and pretend that I'm texting people. Like, I don't know. The phones have been either really good or really bad for my ADD, but, like, I'm a tactile person. Like, even since I was a little kid, if I was taking notes, I was sketching, like, on the sides. Like, my legal pads are just filled with doodles all over. It's like a nightmare. Like, I think we need to have maybe, like, is an in-between, like, a Nokia phone, maybe?
Right? It's like, you know, if we bring the Zach Morris phone from Saved by the Bell, I'll be like, clearly there's nothing I can do with this.
What about a non-functioning BlackBerry?
No, you know, I do still have one of those.
I still have my pink one. And I also have my Motorola Razr or whatever, Motorina or whatever. I don't know. Wait, so this is how we're going to get fucked with this trial, is because it's a federal trial. So I was told, you might have told me this, or Emily D. Baker might have told me this, or the Bravo docket, one of my legal experts might have told me this, that because it's a federal trial, it's not being televised, that somehow it being a federal trial makes it not televised or something?
Yeah, that's why we couldn't, like, I couldn't get information on the Todd Chrisley case. That's a, you know, federal, you know, so yeah, so that's why I have to be in New York and I have to go into the courtroom because, you know, like, sure, there will be like a few media outlets who can afford to, you know, probably send a few people then, but then we have to wait for them to report on it. And it's like, no, I want the information myself. So I don't know if I have to do a GoFundMe for it, be like, I need to be in New York for a month. Because this is going to, according to the legal document that I saw, that I also set up a Pacer account. So the legal documents. It's exactly, this is how lawyery I'm getting. I set up a Pacer account, which is like a special sort of like where you get all the forms and all the things that are filed. And it says in this document, it's going to last 4 to 5 weeks. And so I'm going to have to be in New York for 4 or 5 weeks. The interesting thing about this form, too, is this is actually a letter from Jen Shah's attorney to the judge because, the trial's been delayed so many times. Multiple times.
Right? I had it in my calendar the first time. I was so upset. I was like, what? I like booked color around this. I didn't really.
This strongly worded letter, it was like basically saying, look, we're a small law firm and you're putting undue sort of hardship on us because we've had to delay. We've blocked out time October 2021, then again in March 22. And so, this is causing us hardship. And if you're planning to delay it again, we're going to ask that you give us another judge because who can fit it on the schedule. So I think that was sent to the judge and it looks like the response came back because it does say that this trial will commence July 18th at 9:30 a.m. in courtroom 23A and will continue day to day until its completion. So I don't think it'll be delayed again.
Wait a second. I had in my Google Cal for July 11th. Are you telling me it got delayed again from the 11th to the
18th? Well, this is... The letter that I just downloaded today says it will commence July 18th.
Not like I have literally any plans, but like I'm going to pretend to be really upset because I spent almost a second putting that in my Google Cal. Now I have to double that time to change the date. Are you kidding? Also, is this not the worst day of Jen's life when she found out it wasn't going to be televised? Like you're not even getting press from this. It's just going to be the walks.
I know. And I mean, look, I would also love like if we can, because that was the thing, because in the letter it does say that it was originally set for July 11th. You were right. It does say that it was originally set for July 11th. And so when they sent this letter and they said, so I guess the judge's response was it'll commence July 18th. So that was the day that could fit in the schedule. So I don't think so. Maybe we're breaking news. People probably still think it's July 11th. It's going to be July 18th. Maybe we shouldn't tell people because we don't.
Yeah, guys, earmuffs or whatever. Be like them, the whatever, wedding crashers or whatever the fuck where there were earmuffs happening. So we're going to have a little, I think we should have a Bravo row. I think it should be you, me, and Emily. And we'll talk to each other and maybe watch a little bit of the trial or just like, I don't know, just chat, I guess, for like 7 hours a day for 5 weeks. I'm not doing you're planning to do, well, if you're going to be here, you're going to do every day.
I mean, if, again, this would require someone to sponsor my life in some way, but like if I could find some media outlet who wants to send me there as their correspondent.
Why wouldn't, I mean, I don't know anything, shout out Lemonada Media, but why not do, you have, I'm sorry, you're fantastic podcast with Lemonada Media, which I've been so thankful to guest on and had an amazing experience. Why wouldn't they do an offshoot, like a one episode a week that's just you talking about the trial, giving a roundup of the week?
That's my hope. I'm hoping. I've sent emails out today.
All right.
We'll see who responds to them. So, but like, yeah, if I have to be there for a month,
you got to be paid for that.
It's like, it's going to be a lot of stuff. So, and, obviously it'd be, something that I think would be of interest to people. So we'll see.
Listen, to any news outlets out there, Kiki's available. I'm available. And I just have to say, you could find yourself like a legal scholar. And those people are great. But do they know housewives? You want someone who knows housewives. So when Jen stands up on the middle of a Wednesday and starts yelling about Brooks, you want someone who knows what she's talking about. If she shows up with a certain tracksuit, you're going to want to know. If she shows up in a color you weren't expecting, but maybe a fabulous outfit we saw that she's, putting on again from a previous season as a little thank you to her fans, you're going to want to know that. You're going to want to know. You're going to want to know the background. And that is something that only Bravoholics can really deliver.
Absolutely. And honestly, I would love if we could find a way also to GoFundMe and get that court drawer who was there for the Black China Kardashian case out for the Jen Shah case. Can you imagine the
looks,
the arts? Yes, we would get the looks, the art. It would be amazing. I mean, I just think that like somebody... I know what I want in my head. Somebody wants this too. And so somebody just needs to fund our lifestyle to make this happen.
I know that it's a much more serious trial than like when Naomi Campbell showed up for community service, wherever that was. But I will never forget the coverage on like Vogue.com, or it was like Harper's Bazaar did like a full styled photo shoot because she showed up in full glam couture runway every day for community service. And that in and of itself was a community service. And I just want to see what Jen's going to deliver. I think she's going to do like gray but sequins. Like, how far do you think she'll take it?
Sequins might be a bit far, but I think it...
Like a demure feather? Is there a demure feather?
Maybe furry. I don't know about feathery, right? Like, you know, like a fur trim I could see. Like, but it's also July. It's going to be hot in New York. It's sweaty. It smells like pee. Like, you know, it's downtown. Like, it's going to be hot. So she's going to like, you know, she's going to want to wear a lot of white, A, to look angelic, and B, just to like, you know, be lighter.
And also Coach Shaw. Yeah, because you don't want to wear a lot of layers when it's summer. You want to be walking around as close to fully nude as humanly possible. Like, it's
exactly,
it is trash. No, New Yorkers aren't here during the summer. New Yorkers who can flee, and those of us who can't afford to, we're here and we enjoy the silence, but everybody else is like living their best lives. What is kind of interesting, I don't know if you know anything about this, like, what's the deal with Coach Shaw? Because isn't now when coaches are doing recruiting or training camps or something, like, is he going to be there in court with her?
I would imagine he would be because, you know, I mean, he's probably put in for, time off. I mean, again, it's going to be 5 weeks of their life, and I can't imagine that she would be there all by herself. But I mean, who knows? I don't know. I mean, I would think so though, right?
I also wonder, I mean, I think Heather Gay said, and I don't know how literal she was being, and that's not a judgment of her, but like said something along the lines of like, we'll be there to support you or something. I wonder how they're going to film this or what the current filming schedule looks like. Will they still be filming? Will they have cast go to New York to quote unquote support her, noting that they can't get any like B-roll inside of the courthouse from their cameras or cameras that aren't allowed in court? I wonder what that is going to look like just for production.
I definitely think that they will have cameras like, you know, around when that's happening, because that would be a miss if they didn't. And then hopefully they'll come to us for the footage of what happens inside.
Can you even? Bravo, if you're listening. The after show of after shows. The People's People's Court is all I'm saying. It's going to be great. Listen, speaking of great, there's other shit happening that's happening on TV. We've got the Dubai premiere. Atlanta was in New York. Beverly Hills was at Sutton's store doing some stuff. I'm curious about your thoughts. What's really gotten your attention of the franchises that are on air? And none of them is a completely appropriate response. Is there anything that you've kind of been focused on or thinking of where you're like, wow, I can't believe that happened, or I want to unpack that a little bit more? Is there anything that, as the CEO of Deep Dives, has there been a topic, a plot line that you've wanted to deep dive that's gotten your attention?
Well, I definitely, I mean, Dubai, I mean, that premiere was amazing. And I need to understand why Caroline Stansberry and...
Stansberry? Stansberry! Oh, my God.
What's her name? Caroline Stansberry, isn't it? I don't know.
Chanel Ayan. It's the best moment of Chanel Ayan's life just now. She's going to run with it. Yes, yeah, Stansberry. Stansberry's it. That's it. Stansberry. One less S.
Okay. I've been saying her name wrong for years.
Oh, I love it. I shouldn't have said anything. I should have just let that go. Oh, God. Missed opportunity. Next time.
But yeah, I want to know what the beef between her and, Chanel. They just don't, get along at all. And there's got to be something deeper there, because we're not, and I don't feel like we saw it.
Do you think it is potentially as simple as two alphas meeting and deciding there can be only one?
This is true. I mean, highly, highly possible. But aren't all women, or not all, but like the majority of women on these shows are alphas, no? There's like usually a couple betas just because you needed them for just like to play the foil or whatever. But I feel like most of them are alphas.
I think an overwhelming majority of them consider themselves alphas. And then oftentimes when meeting up with the rest of the cast, decide I'm either not going to sacrifice what these other women are doing in which to become the true alpha nightmare of the group, or sometimes there's a little bit of a genuine shift that takes place. I don't know how much of that is because of the very nature of filming or anything else, but there does seem to be on Chanel Ayan's side a dislike, and on Caroline Stanberry's side a dislike and discomfort. And I feel like some of that has to do with them trying to figure out who is going to be the star of this group.
That makes sense. I can see that. Yeah.
Like on the, you know, there's a cast Q&A, which Bravo gave me permission to record. So AGs can listen to that on the AG Patreon, a 20-minute Q&A that followed this screening premiere party that was held at here in New York last week. And there was a point when they were asked who their favorite housewife was, and it was just like wild answers. Like Stanberry said one of her favorites was Lisa Rinna. Chanel Ayan said one of her favorites was Jen Shah. It was like absolutely chaotic. But the majority of the group, including Caroline Stanberry, also noted Lisa Vanderpump. And it made me kind of think of the ways that these women view currying favor among housewives, regardless of whether or not they're still in the cast, in the sense that like they might look at LVP and say, she's a great housewife, she's my favorite. They might also say like, I don't want to piss this woman off. And yet the opposite is true already of how they react to each other in the group. Like Stanberry isn't concerned about pissing off Ayan. Ayan's not certainly not concerned about pissing off Stanberry, which is an interesting way to start a show.
Well, it is, but I find that like that's been the trend in all of the franchises lately. Like even if you, so you watched Atlanta, you know, the most recent episode of Atlanta, the newest housewife, the Olympic, what, I don't remember
Sonya.
Her name. You know, she was getting into it with Drew, which felt kind of left field, right? You know, like they had developed this really good friendship that, you know, she got into a car accident. She was the first one she called. Yeah. And then all of a sudden she was kind of like digging into her, and it definitely felt very much like first season, I need to make my mark.
Oh, interesting.
And you know, Drew is the target, right? Drew is clearly the target this season for everybody, I think. Even though Kenya's giving her a break, which is kind of interesting, but like I feel like Drew's the target, so it was an easy one for Sonya to go after. And I think that's just the trend. It's like, I want to stay on. I don't want to be you know, you don't want what's happened to, what's her name, Tracy from Jersey, to be, like, cut out of the reunion.
That's tough. That's after all that glam. Oh, my God. Yikes.
So, yeah, you don't really care how you react with the current cast because it's all about making your mark. And so it doesn't surprise me that, you know, there's going to be that beef. But it just, I don't know, for some reason it just felt like it went back further. But no, it could be just, you're right, something as simple as just, they knew that they wanted to be top dog and there's only room for one.
And the Drew of it all is so interesting because here is someone who obviously seems very aware of her standing or being in the environment of housewives and is ready to monetize it, as so many are, is ready to go to the next level and feels like she wants to really secure her future. And she's coming hard for Sheree. She's coming hard for some of these women. She's saying things as far as her business goes that are reliably housewifery, and yet they make absolutely less than zero strategic or business sense. How do we think she's doing? Like, can you fail upwards at this point on Atlanta? Is that what we're watching play out?
You know, when they were getting on her about her Lose It with Drew program, honestly, I felt like they were being really hard on her, like, because I'm like, okay, she has what sounds to me like a program that you can follow in various ways, which is somebody who has gone on multiple, you know, weight loss programs. Then, yeah, it's like you do typically have like a journal that you keep, but you also might need a support group a la Weight Watchers, but you also might also need to go to a camp because you need a kick, you know, a kickstart. So I didn't find anything wrong with her model, but it's just like funny in this world too, where it's like everybody now, because Housewives has become the new true crime doc, they're like trying to uncover like who's up to shadiness because they want to see their own arrest. They want to see their own Jen Shah in a way because it brings so much viewership. I mean, look at Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Like, Erica Jane is, that whole season exploded so that people who didn't even watch Housewives were interested in this trial. Jen Shah gets arrested, and now Salt Lake City people, a franchise that people like thought was going to be a huge failure, is now like on everyone's mind, you know? So it's kind of weird that they're kind of trying to throw each other under the bus in that respect.
Do you think that they're saying Ponzi scheme because they think it's actually illegal, or do you think that they're just saying that to be insulting?
I think they're saying it to be insulting because they know, but also because the likelihood that we're going to find Ponzi schemes in Housewives is like higher than normal because these you know, it's very easy. And that's the thing. Like, if you just keep throwing Ponzi scheme out there, somebody's going to probably be in a Ponzi scheme at some point.
I mean, listen, there's the all in with Teddy Joe, which to me is completely beyond dangerous and unethical, disordered eating factory style Michigas. Like, and the fact that she knows because it went viral and did nothing about it and in fact doubled down shows that Teddy is an absolute monster. I said this on social this weekend, and I just heard from OG of the AG, Damian Bellino, who's like, what inspired this? And I said, I just was thinking about her, and I realized I couldn't do it without spiraling. She has replaced Danielle Staub as my number one Housewives trigger. I can't think about her without getting viscerally upset. I wish I could almost hate watch her social, except she blocked me and all in blocked me when I asked very innocently if I could have carrots for lunch, which, if you know of the viral story, carrots is like worse than a lard tub thing of butter. Nothing.
Wait, carrots?
Yeah, they said that like you're not allowed to eat carrots, maybe unless it's for a snack, because of like fucking sugar, which like I don't know anyone who was like, guess what? I lost all this weight because I cut out carrots. Like, I don't think that's the thing. And it's also just what an indicator that you're trying to get people to starve themselves because you think that carrots is too much of a delicacy and a dessert treat in which to snack. She's just such a piece of shit. I can't take her. But when I hear of the Drew stuff, I'm like, it reminds me less of Teddy Joe and more of Sonia Morgan. And like, that I don't think there's a real business model here. So I can't even get into the minutia of like, what are you doing? Because it feels a little, you know, toaster oven with no toaster. I don't even think we got a box.
Yeah, I think that's more like it. I agree. I think it's like it's less Ponzi scheme and more just like delusions of grandeur. Yes. Of like, I've made it on this reality show and I need to like keep throwing out anything until it sticks because I have this opportunity. And yeah, it definitely feels more like that because you know, I don't know if Drew, I don't know if Drew is the person I would necessarily consider as like the go-to if I want to like get in shape. Like, Sheree was right. She's like, you know, I got this. Like, when I see Sheree, I think like, oh, wow, she has kept herself in shape. If she started like a program, I'd probably join in because like I've seen her over the years and she's like, she's always stayed super fit, but in really great shape. So it makes sense. Drew, I mean, we have the weave line, because didn't we have a weave line or a wig line last year? Yeah, she brought that. Didn't she bring that wig to the party? Was that her? I thought it was her wig for some reason. Maybe not.
Oh my God, I hope it was, because then at least she got a discount on it. $500 or whatever it was. That's when I got really upset. I got very triggered by her trying to pass off, I think it was like luggage, as like an expensive gift, as did the women. It was just write a check at that point. Like, don't try to pretend this is right.
And all of this, I feel like, is ultimately just to cover up. She's trying to, A, make a life for herself and just distract from her own marriage. Yeah. Because the reality is, like, that marriage. Every time I watch them on screen together, I just cringe because it's like his overacting of like love and love, you know, it's like he leaves a room and it's like, mwah, mwah, mwah. And it's like, you only do that when you are just trying so hard to cover up the fact that you are just not a good guy. And I don't think he's a good guy.
What do you think of them attempting to work on their marriage? What do you think the goal should be that they're working toward?
I think that they're talking around working on the marriage, but like the core thing, the fact that he still won't admit what happened in Tampa, the fact that he just won't admit like that the massage thing with the assistant was weird. It wasn't like, that's not normal behavior. Yeah. He's still talking and making excuses until they can get through this barrier of like, stop lying to me. There's nothing to work on.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of what Dwight said about She by Sheree, like a fashion show with no fashions, how dreadful. Like, we're looking for a healthy marriage here, but it cannot be found. Like, you can continue to dig looking for it, but all you're going to see is rubble. Like, there's just not... How do you create something that maybe never existed between these two people? Can you do that after, I think they have three kids together. They've been married for however many years. They share a home. If the marriage has maybe been toxic through now, which I don't know is true, but just playing that out, can you make something that has been toxic since its inception healthy? Like, how would you do that?
It would require just a lot more than I think what I see them putting in. Like, you know, I don't think that like praying for it or, you know, having these like, you know, romantic gestures of like, you know, over the top love that's like, you know, externally show. That's not going to do it. They have to go within. And I just don't think Ralph is ready to just be honest. I really don't.
What do you think honesty looks like to him?
I think what it looks like to him would be he might lose his marriage if he was honest about all the things that probably were going down, in my opinion. Because I don't know any man who says I went to Tampa, but it just won't talk about it.
Yeah.
Like every time it's brought up, it's still obviously nagging at her. The fact that she still brings it up, which means she doesn't have resolution, and the fact that he's unwilling to give it to her, that's not honest.
Yeah, and the counsel from the therapist of like, go through, I might be fucking this up, so feel free to fact check me or tell me to go fuck myself, like the counsel from the therapist, the like experiment of go 30 days without arguing with each other, I'm thinking like, is that what we want to do? We want to silence how Drew especially is feeling right now. What is the goal? I don't understand, but I'm also not a therapist, so I might not get it. Like, what's the goal of that?
You know, I don't know. I mean, because not to keep going all over the place.
Go for it. This is what we're here for.
I really did feel for Jennifer Aiden this past season, you know, I love Margaret, but bringing that up when it was something that clearly she had buried. Mm. Now, knowing that she buried it just for herself was kind of interesting, though. Because if she had buried it and because her and her husband had resolved it, I would say, look, you sometimes you make a choice.
Right.
And if that choice is that you both have agreed to let this go, then you have to let it go. And to ever be brought up and like ripped off again is really cruel, right? Especially now that the kids are old enough to know what's going on. Right. I felt so bad about that. Now, I guess it's a little different because it seems like she buried it without actually addressing it. So she was actually holding on to a lot of it. Mm. So I guess in that case, it probably did need to come up again because she needed to resolve it. But I think in general, like if you as a couple, if someone steps out and if you decide that you are honestly going to just let it go, then that's your decision. Let it go. Maybe we don't have to talk about it ever again. And maybe we can just bury it and move on. But I think people have a hard time doing that. And it's clear because, again, with Drew, she seems to bring it up anytime they get into these little moments because it's like the minute the massage thing comes up, it gets thrown back to Tampa, right? Yeah. You know, so.
I mean, I don't know that I have ever been cheated on. It is entirely possible. I don't, that's the whole glory of it, is that you actually really don't know if someone has stepped out on a relationship. If that is the framework of what a relationship looks like to you, you might have an open relationship in which there's a whole other set of terms and understanding. But I would wonder, people have every right to work through it and make the active choice to stay. That's a choice that you get to make for your family and hopefully most importantly for yourself. I would though wonder, because dishonesty seems like such a key part of cheating, how you get to the other side. Like, what does that work look like to not only repair and get to a point where you're hopefully both, you both feel comfortable, safe, and secure in, you know, starting a new chapter together, but also working through to what the truth was behind why this happened. Like, that requires such a delicate honesty and a brave one that, like, I don't know how you get to that point when a lot of couples don't have to do that work. Often, like, the force of adultery pushes you toward doing that radical honesty. I just don't know how you get to the other side, because that actual act of radical honesty is so painstaking. It requires so much effort from both sides. I don't know. I don't even know. Like, we've seen, you know, Shannon and David go to funeral camp. That didn't end up, you know, in the place that they wanted it to be. Or maybe it did. Maybe the honest part that they came to was like, you know what, we were working toward this, but actually it's just simply it's no longer alive. It's no longer there, which is, of course, a completely appropriate response, because it was the best. It ended up being the best for both of them and for their family. But like with Jen and Bill, like, how do you get to that point? Is reality TV what pushed you toward that, if you didn't feel comfortable having those conversations for a decade or 11 years or whatever it was?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think a lot of these, you know, people talk about the, you know, the curse of the housewives and all of this stuff. But I think that a lot of times these people end up on these shows because they are looking for some sort of, like, change, kick in the ass, reboot in some way. And they think that this could offer, right? Maybe they tried the kid thing. People sometimes think the kid will do it. And it's like, that didn't work. And it's like, so this is just another way to sort of, like, to reboot. And it doesn't always work. I mean, as we now have seen, you know, Jennifer Armstrong from OC just filed for divorce today.
Oh, did she? I know that she had just filed for separation. Oh, divorce.
But now she's amended it, and now it's officially divorced.
What was the name on there? Was it Ryan or Ryan?
Ryan.
Sorry to interrupt. I just needed to know, because you don't know. I don't know what he's going by.
Well, I didn't look at the official documents, but the article I read definitely said Ryan.
Okay, into it. Okay, sorry. What were you saying?
So, And so I think, like, you know, and I think that's just what happens. I think, like you said, getting to the root of why these infidelities happen, that really dictates, I think, where it goes. Mm-hmm. Because let's say you get to the root of it, and it's because you do love this person, but you just want to sleep with other people, and you decide that you want to just have an open relationship but still stay together. Maybe you can resolve that if that's the, you know, solution you get to.
Absolutely.
But if the, you know, if you get to, it's like, I don't love you anymore and I'm not attracted to you anymore, well, then that's probably not going to resolve itself. You're going to have to, like, you know.
Well, I mean, you're making so many great points, as you always do. And I feel like the getting to the honest part, and the fact that that might be the goal for some people, it might not also be the goal of both people in the housewives couple. It could be one person coming on the show subconsciously or otherwise, because they're thinking, I'm not getting what I need right now. And the pressure, the push of being on reality TV, what greater mirror, albeit edited, could there be? Which, not to change franchises, but this is the Mary journey that we're taking, which I'm obsessed with. It's why I have so much issue with the presentation of the Erica Jane Tom divorce, because I don't think we're being given an honest explanation. And my instinct, which could be entirely wrong, is because there isn't one. There is no honest explanation of why these two people split up. And any tension, discomfort, emotionally manipulative situation in their marriage, all of that can be true, but I don't think that's why they got divorced. Otherwise, we would be seeing it in some of Erica's reactions to Tom's crimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, we, any couple that you saw either go through like a separation, or it seemed like there was always a sign. Yes. Like, we always saw it as viewers, no matter what. And literally, we never saw an inkling of that. And I'm sorry, like, let's be real. Like, they were going to stay together. If Tom Girardi had money until he died, Erica Jane 100%. Was going to be with him until she died. And so that's why I just, you know, bringing up, the, you know, these text messages that you found. Yeah, you probably did find text messages. And he probably was doing those things. You also probably did not care. Let's be honest, because that's what, when we decide what sort of what our relationship looks like, we can make those rules. Like, I don't care if he screws around with somebody, because I have $40,000 in glam that I need to take care of each month, and he takes care of it. So yeah, I agree. Like, I don't think that divorce was anything other than like, I need to jump ship, because look, he admitted in the deposition, I have no money in any of my bank accounts. And that does not work for Erica's lifestyle.
And also, P.S., speaking of jumping ship, I think he's the one who told her that. Like, I don't think this was Erica making this decision for herself. I think it was a strategic choice that it was made to protect her and protect him as best they could do in a situation in which protection is rapidly dwindling. Like, the possibilities for it are becoming almost insurmountable. This is her desperate act to hold on.
And that's the thing, like, you know, it's so sad, but like, sorry, there's a trash truck. Let me let them go by.
Oh my God, tell Erica I said hi. Oh my God.
But like, I think Tom loved Erica so much. And look, she even talked about it in like the last season about how he was calling her every day and all of these things. Right. Like, he loved her so much. He probably loved her so much that he was like, you're hot right now. You're on one of the hottest shows right now. You need to replace me, because I can't take care of you anymore. Mm. And like, you don't want to lose all your age and looks. You need to go find you someone while you still are the hottest thing on the market. So yes, go be free. I mean, it sounds so, I don't know. Someone probably will say it's anti-feminist, but like, look, again, if you've decided that your role in life is like, I want to be a sugar baby.
Well, and feminism ultimately, correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably am, theater major, hi. But feminism to me is the idea that men and women should be treated equally. And so she has the right to decide how she wants to identify her own goals, desires, and how to get there. Like, you can be as much of a feminist and be financially supported by your husband as you could be if you were not. Like, I think ultimately it's like, I think Erica's a piece of shit, and I would call her that if she was a man or a woman. You know, like, I think that's the perfect idea of feminism, is saying that Erica Jane is truly a supervillain and can go fuck herself absolutely every day. Every day. And she reminds us of that with her dumbass vibrator jokes, in which to hide from responsibility for being a bitch. Like, I think that, yeah, I see no problems with the idea of identifying as a feminist in the lifestyle that she is afforded with funds stolen from burn victims.
But tell us how you really feel.
You know, speaking of how do I really feel, I do want to pivot ever so slightly to this whole conundrum happening on BH with Crystal, Sutton, and Garcelle, which seems incredibly complicated. And I just want to get your perspective, sort of starting with the question Garcelle aimed Crystal's way about, do you think anything Sutton said would have been okay?
Yeah, I hate when I see Garcelle and Crystal and Sutton, when any of the three of them sort of get into it, because I want them to just remain this strong
100%,
trio.
100%. Cracks in the foundation. We don't love it. We got dream team. Yeah.
But, like, it was clear in that moment that, like, Garcelle did want to show her loyalty to Sutton, which I thought was also very important. I think obviously Crystal was caught completely off guard by saying that she thought she was, you know, had set Sutton up. And I think I would have preferred if that conversation had happened just between the three of them. Mm. Like, I didn't like that Garcelle had brought it up in front of the Fox part of the Fox Force Five. You know, like, I just, like, I always want, like, those conversations to be had amongst them. And it's like, you hate to see, like, lines drawn, right, in teams. But that's how it is. Like, you don't want the other team to see your cracks, because then they'll start going after it, too. You know, like, I think... it's so difficult, because I really did truly feel for Sutton in that previous season, because I did feel like Crystal was being, like, a little bit hard on her. And I don't know. I just have this, I really have this soft spot for Sutton, which is funny because I couldn't stand her the first season. Mm. Like, I literally could not stand her. The minute she didn't know who, like, Fenty was, like, I just was like, I'm over you. I can't stand you. Like, Shane, go away. But then, like, you know, when her and, you know, Garcelle started getting the relationship, obviously, I think Garcelle is the one that gave her lended her credibility to me and, like, made me. And so I have this soft spot for her. And I do think that, like, I want to believe she just feels like a harmless person who doesn't, like, know. She's not trying to harm people. But when she is, it's with a purpose, right? Like, the thing she's saying to Erica, I don't think she's trying to harm, but she's being straight up, like, this is how I feel, and this is what I'm saying. And then she doesn't like that sort of thing. So I think they'll get through it. I just hope they get through it between the three of them. I don't think that those issues need to be in front of the entire group.
How do you look at the difference between harmlessness and ignorance?
That's a good question. I mean, because if someone is being ignorant, it can absolutely be harmful. But if you're purposefully just trying to be harmful, with that's malice, right? If you're doing harm and you know you're doing harm, we've learned that that is actually malice, which we're, like, getting really good in terminology now. And she does not seem malicious to me. And I think that's the difference. Like, she says things, and then it's like, oh, so, like, sorry, I'm gonna, like, be better, learn better. And I think she does. I actually think she does. But then, you know, you see stuff like, you know, her at Kyle's house, like, talking about her French designer who can't get into the
country.
And you wonder, like, is she being a little malicious then because she doesn't believe Dorit? I don't know. So
it's one of those great questions of intention versus impact, in the sense that intention really does matter, but so does impact. You don't have to cancel one of them out if the other, if the intention is good, but the impact is bad, the impact is still bad. If the intention is bad and the impact is bad, that's maybe worse, but it doesn't mean that the other option isn't also bad. And that's, I think, the thing that people are struggling with. And there are people who want to know what Sutton said, because I think in finding out the information, they want to be able to make the determination on her intention. But conversely, if the impact was so bad that Crystal is potentially triggered even thinking about it, how do you force someone who is the only woman of color in that scene, when it's Kyle, Sutton, and Crystal, if Crystal doesn't want to talk about it, how do you force someone to do that? Noting, as you said, that the group of women who are asking, Erica has a vested interest in Sutton looking like shit. Lisa's just there to clown out. So, like, whatever Erica does, she'll do it just sloppier and worse. Kyle, I don't actually know what to say about Kyle at this point. We're in a purgatory place right now until she cancels Daddy Joe, which is never going to fucking happen because life is never easy. And Dorit is just trying to survive. And I don't even mean that in a dickish way. She just really, I don't know. She's got a lot going on. So it's like, I don't know how to, but then Garcelle wants to know. So it's like,
that's what I'm saying. Garcelle wants to know. And like Garcelle had a perfectly good point of saying, but I need to know because I need to know how this is going to affect my relationship. Like, don't make me here looking super like valid. A fool. And so that to me is like trumps anything. And for that, Crystal owes her that explanation. It's just, it's only fair.
Yeah, and I wonder, it is one of those things where, like, it does feel, I don't think Kyle was wrong in the response of, like, Sutton is really backpedaling here because she's nervous about what she said. Like, I don't think, regardless of what Sutton said, that does appear to be what's happening. There is a reason that Sutton is very, very focused on moving on, and I do think it is somewhat obvious that has something to do with her, like, not wanting whatever she said to be spoken out loud. But I also get if there is, as Crystal has said prior, an understanding that they had where they decided they didn't want to talk about this, like, at what point does that agreement become null and void? Like, is Andy going to be the judge on this at the reunion who says, like, Crystal can always say, I won't. Or Andy could, God forbid, ask Sutton and not Crystal, specifically what Sutton said. But, like, I would think Andy's going to push pretty hard. Do we have the right, for the purpose of story, for this to be told? Or rather, do you think that it ever will?
Oh, I definitely think that they have edited that scene. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be pulled at the reunion.
Oh, interesting. Whether,
yeah, whether, because there's like, I mean, look, at the end of the day, they want us to tune into that reunion. And even if, let's say, Crystal did at some point reveal what it was, they probably won't even tell us during the season because now it's been sort of built up to this point where everyone wants to know. And if they do that little sizzle reel for the reunion and it looks like it's going to come out, well, then they'll definitely share it. You know, here's the thing. I think that the reason the girls are so hard pressed for Crystal to tell it though, is because again, they have her in this place of like, we feel like you use words that are too strong. Mm. You know, you've said that you felt violated. You felt that this was a dark thing. Is it really as bad as you're saying, or are you again like making it feel worse? And I think that's why they're just like, so like, please tell us, because we want to know if this is like really as bad as you're making it out to be, or like bad in your mind. And I think that's why they're pressing her so hard. But I think for Garcelle, she just really wants to know because that's her friend. That Sutton is her friend. And she needs to know, like, girl, what you been saying?
Two counters to that. Number one, the idea that they are thinking, which I think you're exactly right about, which is why I'm so annoyed, the idea that they're thinking, again, are you using the words again? Because they don't understand the meaning the first time. So they're like, mm-hmm. Now you have a record here, even though they don't get, because they're unwilling to acknowledge her experience, which I think is a little bit of a problem. It is also a problem that they're asking her and not Sutton. And also from the Garcelle of it all, Garcelle just sort of said to Crystal, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, in front of this group of women, which is, you know, would I love it if it was the three of them? Yes. Is that part of her job? Also, yes. In a group scene to like say stuff like that, maybe not this specific, but to say things, to ask questions in a group. Garcelle just said, I don't believe that you were actually upset by things that Sutton said. I think that you would have said that you were upset regardless, which is a very specific point to make. So I don't know what Crystal feels she needs to say to Garcelle, I think, as a follow-up. To me, I'm like, just tell Garcelle. She has a right to know. And this is like usurps the step. But that's very easy for me to say because I wasn't just accused, as Crystal was, of
exactly
baiting statements and responses, which is what I think Garcelle said to her, which sucks.
It does. Like, it does. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, it's, she's basically caught in, like, a really, like, she's in a catch-22 because, like, if she doesn't say anything, it's going to feel like, Garcelle's going to feel like she's betrayed. And then she does say something and it doesn't, quote, live up to the standards of what they believe, then they're going to add this on to, like, see. And so it's, she's in a tough spot. And you know, well, I don't know. See how it plays out.
I mean, that's such a good point as well. Like the idea that it has to live up to standards, they won't take her at her word. She could say something that would be by the book, ignorant and triggering and upsetting. And if they don't have that experience as white women, they're going to tell her it's not good enough. So what a shitty position to be in where you're exactly. not even allowed essentially by this group, the majority rule of white women on this cast who have long been on the show for years prior and have built up their own currency as housewives on top of everything else, for them to say like, oh, that's not big enough drama. I'm sorry. Nope. Even Erica, who like hates Sun and wants to know, like, I don't know what their responses would be. That's a really shitty spot to be in.
Yeah, it is.
I'm telling you, last week's episode, which I just rewatched episode before, I spiraled. I like literally, it has, I think, led to the downfall of my arch nemesis style blocked relationship with Teddy Joe. The idea that these women, did you see what Lisa Rinna posted today? I took a screenshot of it because I had to repost it with scary music.
Yeah.
this motherfucker posted on Instagram stories, as I knew she would. Do I see the future? Possibly. Posted an Instagram story. I wish they, and tagged Teddy, of course she did. I wish, because Teddy probably told her the exact sentence to use. I wish they would hire Teddy Mellencamp back on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She was a great fucking housewife. No one believes that. Teddy knows that's not true. Nobody, her kids don't believe that. Her husband selling robberies doesn't believe that. Nobody believes it. Nobody. She's all out because she was fired, ma'am. She was so great that she was in fact let go.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I don't. It's interesting how strong the relationship bond between every, like, that cast and Teddy has remained. Because I guess I mean, her and Kyle, I saw the relationship.
Yeah.
But, like, with everybody else, I didn't see that strong connection while they were on the show. So I'm just confused by it.
Yeah, I think that's how alliances go. I don't think anyone really cares about Teddy. Except for Kyle. I think Kyle and Teddy have a strong relationship and also extremely strong working alliance, like hashtag sister wives. Like, there is something there where Kyle knows she can depend on Teddy to stand for her absolutely regardless, and a part of that is shitting on everyone else. Like, that they've got that squared away. Kyle is absolutely the alpha in that relationship. With the other women, I think that they want her back so they can maintain majority rule. They don't care that it's not good TV. Lisa Rinna, who seems very focused on what will make good TV regardless of what it will do to the people on said TV, I think she wants her back because she knows that it's a power move for their weird fucking majority. It sucks.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, even just Rinna coming so hard for Kathy Hilton is very odd to me because, again, like, Kyle, that's your sister. And I it's weird. Like, I don't know. I guess I just, like, it's so interesting to me. And I know, like, I understand dynamics and family. Your family doesn't have to be your best friend. I absolutely am the first person to agree with that. It just seemed like they had that moment with the TV trays and crying and being like, we wasted so many years and all. It was everyone's crying, right? We're all crying over it.
I need to watch that
again. To let Lisa Rinna sort of like usurp that just feels really weird.
Yeah, here's the question that I want Andy to ask that I bet he will, because he's like a masterclass at these, at the BH reunion specifically. But I want him to ask Kyle who is coming in the way of her relationship with Kathy, Rinna or Garcelle, because the way that Kyle came so fucking hot for Garcelle for saying God forbid that she has a friendlier relationship with her sister when they weren't talking at that point and yet seems very comfortable in having Rinna be her translator slash usurper. Usurper?
I just use it, but I think it's right, maybe.
Whatever, fine.
Sometimes words, I just say words, that sound
words
right.
Words don't matter, okay? Don't worry about it.
No, that's such a good question. You should actually tweet that now in advance of the reunion so he has it first. Number one question.
Do you know, I have been off Twitter for years, and I saw Rachel Bloom Instagram that she just started her Twitter account again because otherwise you lose it or something after a year, which I didn't know was a thing. So I logged into my Twitter account because I was like, oh, I guess even though it's been multiple years, it's all gone. Like, I still have my handle, but it's all gone. I had, like, Roxanne Gay tweeted me when she was on. I couldn't retweet any of that shit because I didn't have... Well, she, like, hashtagged Annie Scrolls because my account was... Yeah. Like, I don't have any of that fucking shit anymore.
That's weird.
I know. But do I want to be back? Definitely don't. But I want to remember some memories, kind of, before I go offline again. If anybody's working for Twitter, first off, run. I'm so sorry. I'm sure that there are safe spaces. It is not at that frame of work. But if you are still there hiding from Elon Musk, please let me know how to get back some of my sass. Because that would be actually kind of fun to see what awful things I was saying about Teddy several years. Oh, no, I wouldn't have known her at that point. Maybe I was aware. Maybe I'm a witch.
Because I don't tweet at all. I use Twitter purely just to, like, you know, be a troll. Not troll, but, like, research, you know. And I don't tweet anything, and nothing's really been deleted. Is it because I'm logging in to do it? Is that why?
Yeah, like, I haven't. I didn't log in for years. And nobody told me that that wasn't a good idea. I mean, it still was. But someone from Twitter slid into my DMs on Instagram because I'm still not going to check Twitter. And let me know. Listen, Kiki Monique, I could talk to you all day. You know I'm obsessed with you. You have gone ultra viral this spring. I feel like it's summer, but it's people keep telling me it's spring still, which is very weird to me. But anyway, this year month situation stuff, and I highly encourage that if people are not following you on social, they literally must because they're absolutely missing out. Can you tell the AGs a little bit about what they can find on your social as well as on I'm Sorry, one of my absolute favorite pods?
Well, you know, I'm sorry. We talk about, like, celebrity missteps. It's a lot of pop culture things that are happening. And we're mostly just breaking down the nuances of, like, people who have been canceled or who owe apologies. And so it's really just fun talk. And then my Instagram, you know, again, more pop culture talk. We do a lot of deep dives when we get into it. Lately, it's been a lot of court talk, pop culture trials. So we have a lot of things to get through. I mean, we have the Jen Shah trial. Erica Jane will be ongoing and seeing what happens with her and Tom. I mean, he just got disbarred, so he owes all that money. So, yeah. So lots of Bravo, lots of reality shows, and lots of me.
I love that. I love lots of you. And guys, for a little bit extra of me, join the Andy Scrolls Patreon. Number one way to support the pod. $2 a month gets you my love and sass. $5 a month gets you 2 bonus episodes. $10 a month gets you 4 bonus episodes and invites to special Zoom keys that happen seasonally. And some new Patreon episodes that went up. A 1 hour plus episode with James LaRosa. A Satchel Spectacular. That Dubai cast Q&A is up as well. That Patreon AGs have exclusive access to. And speaking of access to fun things, Andy's Girls Live, throwing our first ever virtual live show co-hosted by OG of the AG, Damian Bellino, with content that is not going to be put on Andy's Girls Classic. And P.S., it's June 23rd, $15 tickets on sale now at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this is a show that is time zone friendly. You can get tickets on demand, which means you can watch the show at your leisure a full week following June 23rd. So we have really made sure that all of our international AGs and AGs who might have plans, which are a thing that I've heard of now and again, are able to support the event. would really appreciate it. AG Live again, live from the Clawfuss, June 23rd, $15 tickets on sale now at loopedlive.com. That's LOOPEDLIVE.com. Can't wait to sass with you again. And Kiki Monique, die for you. Talk of shame. Did we shame talk anybody today?
Just a little bit.
Okay, good, good. We met our quota. All right, guys. Hope you are all hanging in, and we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.